All right, guys. Welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and John Barman's with me on the phone. And today we're going to talk about muscle building a little bit more and actually go into some of the things that muscle building actually revolves around, some of the true things that it revolves around, and kind of dispel some myths and things like that. John, go ahead and take it away. Let's go ahead and talk about some of these basic premises that we really need to get a handle for people.
Yep. Okay. So there's a few variables. There's where you are in your lifestyle. So how long you've been training, your genetic predisposition, and a few things like that. And then there's also the type of training you're doing and what it is that you're doing, like in the gym, and your consistency and different things like that. So there's kind of how there's two things. There's internally how you're built, and then there's what you do. And those are the kind of the two sides of the coin that determine how much muscle you can build. So I guess if we start with just yourself and how you're built, you've got your, I guess your somatotype's the very first thing to look at. And are you starting off with more base material? I think that's one of the hardest things for guys to grip or to get their head around is the fact that we're not all built. We're not all starting with the same base material. Some of us have more muscle mass just to begin with than others. And then, you know, given the same workout routine, the same intensity, the same effort, if you and the next guy over go and do the exact same number of sets and reps at the same intensity with the same consistency, but he has more base muscle than you, he's going to just be bigger than you. And even though you're getting bigger, he'll be proportionately also getting bigger. But if he's starting bigger, he's going to end bigger. So you just can't catch him. It's kind of like how an ecto just can't catch an endo. And even if it's just a few pounds of muscle, you just can't catch him because, you know, he's doing just as much work as you are. So that's part of the reason why we always say don't compare yourself to others. Just compare yourself to yourself. Or if you are going to try to at least find a model, that model has to be I don't mean an actual model, but I mean your role model or your body image role model. It's got to be somebody that if you have any idea if they're the same starting somatotype as you, the same age as you, or at least somewhere in the same age range, the same training experience as you. And if you don't have that kind of model chosen, it's kind of hard for you to – well, it just doesn't make any sense to use them as a model. And you need to know what they're using as far as stimulants, drugs, if they use, and if they do, what they're using. And if you're going to – if you want to look like them, you have to use the same stuff. If you don't want to use the same stuff, if you want to be clean, then your model has to be clean. And so when you add all that together, it becomes very difficult for you to find somebody else to compare to who basically isn't just in your immediate friend circle. Which doesn't – I mean, I'm sure we all have a buddy who's got – you know, who's just – you know, you like the muscular size of a buddy of yours, and you're like, yeah, I could train with him. I want to be that big, that sort of thing. Doesn't mean you can't find those people. It's just you need to be specific. Like I've said a bunch of times, one of my training partners is a true endo, and he's one of the most powerful people I've ever met. I've never even known him in his entire training sort of career for the past 12 years to ever make it through an entire year of training without taking 2 or 3 months off due to he falls off the wagon, something happens at work, a relationship thing, something happens and he's just sort of always gone and then he comes back. But he's still the strongest guy in the gym even after a long layoff. He's just that big and that powerful. And I can't catch him. I'll never catch him. It doesn't matter what I do. I'll never actually get to his size. But I don't expect to. It's all relative. So that's just you got to be aware of who you're using as your model, because your genetic starting material is the number one determining factor for where you're going to get to. And if you kind of ignore that, you could be setting yourself up for just years of frustration, of thinking you can't jump the spectrum in either direction. You know, ectos can't become endos and endos can't become ectos, and that's just that. But I mean, wherever you are, it doesn't mean you can't improve. It's just don't expect to jump it. And then from there, the external influences, so how you train, if you do or don't touch drugs, and how consistent your training is, how smart your training is, your ability to avoid injury, those sort of things are what goes into how far you can push your muscle gains.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because for a lot of people, when they go and look for a model, most of the time a lot of people look at models for specific body parts as well. And what tends to happen is the actual model will have a great-looking chest or a great-looking, you know, set of abs or something like that. And they'll ask that person for advice on how to get abs like theirs or a chest like theirs. But they're already starting out with a good chest. I mean, that's already one of their best features. And they're asking that person how to train. The other people should train to get that feature, and it's just not going to overlap. I mean, I've said it times and times again. It's like, it'd be like asking me how to train to get good calves. It doesn't, it's not going to help. If you have small calves.
The answer is pick good parents.
Right.
Yeah. Be born right. To have parents that genetically had huge calves.
Sure. And that's exactly what it is. My brother and my sister, my brother and our legs, they look very similar. I mean, to a T. So it's like neither one of us have ever really had to do any of that type of work. I mean, other type of work. Like for me, it's really weird. Like the like my chest and biceps tend to grow a little slower than everything else. Like they just don't. They get strong, but they just don't get big like other people's do. You know. But on the other hand, like my shoulders and back and legs and glutes or ass or whatever you want to call it, they grow a lot faster. For some reason, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, everyone's shaped slightly differently, and the interesting thing there is you can have three guys of the same height, can have the same golden ratio, can be at the same Adonis index ratio, but look different because each muscle group is shaped slightly differently. So, and like you just said, some people are chest dominant, some people are shoulder dominant, at least from the front view. Some people are like a trap. Dominant look, so it's trapezius. So it just everyone's got a slight different thing that is their dominant feature, so to speak. Over time, as you train in a balanced routine, most of it will balance out, and the differences, although still noticeable, aren't going to be. It's not going to be as if you're just completely missing a muscle group, and it's just in awkwardly small. It's just obvious where each person's sort of strength is. And as you, I mean, in this sort of thing's almost indistinguishable until you are relatively lean, when you can tell which muscle groups need more work. And that's when you get into the refining and the sculpting of your physique. This is, I guess this partly answers the question of what do you do when you get to your golden ratio? There's still lots of work to do. I mean, you can still be bringing up certain muscle groups and, focusing your attention in one place versus another. Like you said, bringing up your arms if you want to bring your arms up, or even bringing up a part of your arm. Some people seem to be, I don't know, some people have triceps that just dominate their arm without doing any real extra tricep work. It's just sort of the base materials is a bit bigger there, or even the way it's shaped. Even muscle bellies, the muscle belly itself can be a different length on different people. So it doesn't take much for that to look like a lot different. If my bicep muscle belly is slightly longer than yours, my arm may look significantly bigger overall, but if we measure it at its thickest point, our arms could actually be the same thickness at the thickest point, but the muscle belly on my arm may go longer. So it kind of, you see what I mean? Like the muscle belly goes closer to the elbow, whereas somebody else's may not make it as far down. So their arm might look smaller, but at its largest peak, our arms could actually be the exact same size. So these are like all different little illusions that if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't really. Or if you weren't being very meticulous with the way you're measuring it, you wouldn't think about that, and you'd be wondering, why is that guy's arm so much bigger, even though like right next to yours, it's about the same circumference, and just the length of the muscle belly alone could change, and then incidentally, that also changes the strength of those muscles too.
Sure. Well, let's talk about a couple of things really quickly as far as like myths, and I've got two right on the top of my head that I want to discuss. Number one is the fact that you can actually increase the size of your rib cage, and number two is. I don't want to say this is a myth, but talk about age and how that kind of comes into training. We've talked about it a little bit before, but I want guys to really understand the fact that, a lot of before and afters you see that revolve around muscle building. All the people that are there are probably 25 and under from pretty much what I've seen just across the board. And that actually makes a difference.
So sure. So you can't expand your rib cage. That's ridiculous. You can't just change the shape of where your bones are. That's just basic anatomy. I mean, if anyone who thinks you can actually expand your rib cage doesn't really understand what they're. That's just anatomically, you can't change the shape of your bones. They're just where they are. So that just doesn't make any sense. And so that's the answer to that question. And then as far as age, this gets to juvenile versus mechanical muscle growth. We've talked about this before. You know, when you're in your late teens and early 20s, your body is still itself just growing. Like, your bones are still getting to the point where they're coming to full maturity. Same with your muscle mass is coming to its full maturity. So you're in a highly anabolic growth state at that age anyways. So if you adopt a strength training program at that age, and typically most guys have a lot of energy. We can push hard. We can fight through injuries. We can do all that kind of stuff. You can double up on your growth potential by your body just growing into itself, as well as stacking that with weight training. So that's why guys have some rapid growth around those ages. I mean, that's why you see pro athletes, or at least collegiate or minor league athletes who are being drafted to the pros or making it to the pros, and they have that big jump of body weight, where analysts will be like, well, that guy just needs to put on some weight and he'll be ready for his pro career. And he actually does it. He just does it over a 6-month period. He's in the, I'm not saying that's clean. I'm sure a lot of those guys use drugs, but they're still at the age where that's still possible to really sort of grow into their bodies. You don't see, besides Barry Bonds, you don't see guys in their late 30s still gaining muscle mass. You don't, even pro athletes, it just doesn't happen. Like, think of any of your kind of the pro athletes you know about over the past 10 years. Have they changed at all in body shape or size? That's just the size they are. But when they were younger, they had to train into and grow into that body. But then after that, all their training is to maintain that body. Even pro bodybuilders, like, once they get to their highest level, which usually they hit earlier in their career, that's about the size they are for their entire career. I mean, if you can watch interviews with them, and they, Dorian and Ronnie and all those guys, they don't look to put on any more muscle after they've made it to their top level. So that's even, I know that's, those guys are all drug induced, but even they have a limit based on the amount of time they've spent training and their age, where they're just at the size they can manage. And they're, anything short of going even beyond the doses they're using, there is no more growth in that body. Like, now it's just refining. And at that point, they're looking at a pound or two here and there and just refine the look they have based on what the judges have told them from show to show as to what, what area needs to come up and what area might need to come down. And then that's it. So I guess you could say they're a supercharged version of what we're doing. We're not using the drugs and we're not getting to their size, but we're basically doing the same thing. We're building you up to your sort of biggest natural size, which I believe is a golden ratio at golden Adonis ratio at the numbers we picked. And from there, it's refining that shape. And so there's lots of refining you can do with various muscle groups, but it's there is a limit. And once you've kind of got to a 1.6 AI ratio, from there, it's just maintaining it. And that takes just as much work as getting there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. And one of the things that kind of comes up a lot of times is we talk about food and growing muscle and even some supplementation. I guess one of the big things that guys ask all the time, especially if they're younger, is if, extra food will actually help them. And then obviously that translates into the older guys, because distinctly these are two different, demographics of people and two different kind of physiological effects. Like you had just said, one's got, some juvenile muscle growth to kind of bank on as well, and then the other guys don't. And I guess what I really want to get into is the fact that, nobody wants to get fat on purpose, because it sucks trying to get back. So let's kind of talk about that a little bit and kind of really delve into that part.
Yeah, I challenge anyone to come up with an actual caloric cost of building a pound of muscle. Me and Pilon were actually toying around with the idea of giving away some kind of monetary prize for anyone who can produce the proof of how many calories it takes to build a pound of muscle. And because we've looked high and low, and we've never seen it. So, like, I've never seen any scientific evidence of any caloric cost at all of building muscle. Mm-hmm. So, it's a mystery. We don't really know how quickly it can grow. When you're saying muscle growth, what are we even talking about? Mostly it's just a hydration status and, some amount of extra protein in the fibers itself. But in general, we're not even talking about something that's all that measurable. It's sort of nebulous. And so, this gets back to the muscle index and why we built that new measurement tool anyways, because it is so difficult to quantify muscle growth. And so the calories for muscle growth, and I feel like we're beating a dead horse. I think that's just a supplement bodybuilding fitness industry way around not being able to prove or show muscle growth. So what they do is just tell you to eat calories and get heavier and get bigger, and all your kind of measurements will go up and you'll fill an extra large shirt. And then, if your weight goes up, they can just say, there, that was muscle growth. But that's a crude measurement. We know how easy we can manipulate our body weight just by eating. So I think it's the sort of the guy who's afraid to use steroids but wants to do something, like feels like he needs to do something besides just working out. Well, everyone just tells him to eat, and since he'll gain body weight the same as the guy who's using steroids, he can pretend like he's gaining muscle mass the same as the guy who's using steroids. I think the entire muscle building supplement industry and the whole bodybuilding diet industry, like not dieting for weight loss, but dieting for or changing the way you eat for muscle building, is purely a surrogate for guys who just are afraid to use drugs.
Right. So let's kind of talk about too as well, we really can't come up with a true, metabolic cost for building muscle. What are some of the things that guys can actually do? Because, like I say, there's no really bang on way to do it. The way I kind of think about it is that, and we've talked about it before, is that, if you're younger, yeah, you probably can get away with eating more than you can if you're older, just because you've got some of those other effects. But just the fact of, eating, once your waist starts getting bigger, well, then that means that there's spillover, and that's energy that you're not using to build muscle.
Yeah, and that right at that moment, you've eaten too much. Mm-hmm. Because by definition, if you're putting on fat, that means that your body allocated the calories you ate, the extra calories you ate, to fat. So if your body put it in fat, that means it didn't need it for anything else, i.e. it didn't need it to build muscle. So if you I don't care how many calories it is. Let's say you're eating 3,000 calories a day, thinking you're building muscle. But let's say your metabolic rate's 2,000, and including your activity, you only burn 2,500. And you think that extra 500 calories is going into helping you build muscle. But over the course of a month, if you've put on 3 or 4 pounds of fat, as measured by your waist getting bigger and, you're smoothing out and your definition's getting worse. Well, by definition, your body didn't use it to build muscle. It used it to build fat. So that's mm-hmm. how you know. So if you start getting smoother and fatter, that's how you know it's excess. You don't need it. So, but the thing is, and now this is the catch. The thing is, we lay down body fat all over our bodies. Now we do lay down more in our abdomen, but it doesn't. All 20 pounds, if you gain 20 pounds of fat, all 20 of it's not right in your gut. It's spread around your body with most of it in your gut, but there's still a fair bit all over the place. So the thing is, you will have fat deposited in your arms, chest, back, and legs to some degree. So that means all of those measurements will go up a bit, and you will feel bigger in all of your clothes. So there's the illusion that you're building muscle when it really is just fat.
Sure. Well, everybody's seen a fat steak before. In the muscle.
And it's not even a bad thing. If you just want to be bigger in your shirt, that's fine. It's just admit that that's what you're doing. And admit that you've gotten smoother, you're not as lean, but you're bigger. Like if your goal is just to take up more space, then that's just admit that that's your goal. But just quit telling yourself that it's just all muscle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that kind of cuts into the whole I lost body fat because – not only did I gain 20 pounds of muscle, but I lost 7 pounds of fat or something like that. I kind of saw that the other day. I was looking at a before and after picker on, I think it was on TV or something like that. And the guy basically was saying that not only did he gain 20 pounds of muscle, but he lost, his body fat percentage went down too. And it gave the illusion that the guy lost body fat. But if you really think about it, just by gaining a little bit of muscle, or quote-unquote lean mass.
Your body fat percentage always has to go down, yeah.
Yeah, it has to go down.
Not your total body fat, your body fat percentage.
Right.
Hey,
so,
hey, your body fat percentage is lower after a meal just because you're heavier. And all of that meal records as lean mass. This gets into the measuring issue. They confuse muscle mass with lean mass, assuming that all lean mass is muscle mass. And since lean mass can go up and down rather quickly, you can make the erroneous assumption that that means your muscle mass is going up and down quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just errors in measurement. And again, all of this is the minutia. It's like, what do you look like? Do you look better or not? So right. I think one of the first steps to like breaking away from getting caught up in all this stuff is accepting what your realistic limits are, or accepting what a realistic rate of growth is. So if you're constantly thinking you can actually gain faster than you really can, you're always going to be disappointed, and you're always going to be tempted to try all these other strategies.
Sure.
Like I did it. I mean, I just didn't want to accept how slow muscle gains came, so I just did whatever it took to gain. So I kind of know how that works. Like I know what it takes to go from 190 to 250. I mean, I can help you do that if you want. It's, you know, it'll be kind of pricey, and it, you know, there's some risks involved, but that's just what it takes. And if you think you can do it without drugs, you're kidding yourself.
Right. I mean, the big thing is that if there was a way to induce steroid-like effects without using steroids, then
everybody would be doing it, and no one would be using steroids.
Yeah, exactly.
Who the hell would choose to do that if they didn't have to?
Exactly.
Like, that's the part that guys who've never used don't get. I mean, the guys who have used or use kind of laugh at all the guys who don't use, who think that they're going to gain the same as them. Like it's, you know, I've been on that side of the coin. I've watched the smaller guys in the gym, like, you know, just plug away thinking one day they're going to be like standing where we are. And I'm like, you're just not going to be here. Like either. And then some guys just get it. Some guys are like, you know, and I've talked to some of my friends. They ask me about it, and I'm like, well, you know, this is what it takes. This is what you use, and you either make the decision or you don't. And I have some guys who were old, like used to be right on the verge. They were super curious, but just too scared to try it. And then the guys who do use, they get it. Then they, you know, then we just talk about how much we use, what how it went, you know, how things are going, you know, what their growth was like, you know. Side effects, you know, how did your joints feel? Just, I don't know, just whatever, right? But then you get it. Then you're like, oh, this is how you, this is what the guys who bench press 350 for sets of 10, this is what they're doing. Like, this is, you know, I used to look across the gym wondering how the hell those guys did that. And I'm like, oh, this is how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the little guys just think you train hard. And I'm like, wow. I mean, no, not to these degrees, not when you're at this size. Like, you can train your way to an impressive physique, but you can't train your way to freak status. That's impossible.
Right.
And I want to put a disclaimer here. I'm not saying you cannot build an impressive physique clean. What I'm saying is you can't have that freakish kind of size that it seems most guys have their minds calibrated to, or at least I did. I totally didn't understand I was just looking off to like bigger and bigger and bigger. So, and I mean, coming all the way back, that's why Adonis is the way it is. We think we've calculated the biggest, most pleasing look that you can get clean. So we've kind of calibrated the goal as to something that doesn't require drugs. But it's still hard for guys to wrap their head around it. Like even in the forum, I was looking at some discussions in the forum today, and some people were asking about how lean they have to be or how light their body weight has to be to see a six-pack. And, you know, Jason jumped in there and he's like, well, you know, getting to 1.6 is one body weight, then getting a six pack is actually even lighter than that. And he was like struggling with how light he was when he was like totally ripped. And it's, I don't know where it happened, but along the lines, guys just thought they could be heavier. And I think that's when they were looking over at us, like us, meaning when we were the guys on drugs and we were like the big guys taking up a lot of space and we were also lean. I think that's what skews guys' perception of how big they can be and being lean at that size as well. Like when you see a guy walk in the gym who's not any taller than 6 feet or maybe 5'10", and he's 210, 220 pounds and lean, like really lean, you're looking at that going, oh, that's probably doable, but it's not. It really isn't without drugs.
Right. And that's the funny thing is that even those guys that are coming in at 220, you know, 6 foot, they're not even as lean as they could possibly be, because when they get contest time,
Well, they'll come down from there. Oh, sure. Yeah. Dude, some of the Olympia contestants, like Dexter Jackson, won, and he was only 210, 215.
Right.
And he's one of, well, Mr. Olympia. I mean, you can't get any better than that. So, I mean, guys who think they can just pick a body weight and say, I'm going to be lean at that weight, are delusional.
Right. So
what there is how heavy you will be when you get your six-pack, and the only way to know that is to get a six-pack, then go stand on the scale.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. And you can't just say, I want to be 20 pounds heavier, but we're still in this condition. That's unrealistic.
Right, and all guys know that. We talked about this in the last podcast about how guys kind of overcompensate for a lot of different things.
Yes.
When it comes to what they think makes them a man, I guess you could say body weight, shirt size, you know, pecker size, whatever you want to say. And everybody overestimates, or not overestimates, but overcompensates for that. I mean, you see a lot of guys all across the board overestimate not only how tall they are, this is in sports, but how much they weigh. I mean, just all across the board. Mm-hmm. But you know, the funny part about it is that when you get, they always overestimate until it comes time to play ball in the realms when body weight matters. So when you have weight classes.
Oh yeah, then all of a sudden it's okay to be light.
Yeah, then they don't play around.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. You look at some of the guys, and it's like, you know, he's doing the craziest things you could think of just to get to 165 so he can weigh in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I get all of it's rooted in insecurity. It's funny. Who knows when along the line it happens? But at some point, we all of a sudden become conscious of how much we weigh and think it matters. Mm-hmm. I talked to some girls I know, and some of the girls I know can remember the day, the exact day when they became aware of their body. And it's like some terribly traumatic day when they're 12 or 13 years old and all of a sudden realize they're not. It's when they go from being just kids and that guys and girls are all just kids. And then they realize, oh, wait, the boys look at us based on our bodies and how we actually look. And then they all have like this. For a lot of girls, it's this crushing day where they realize they're being judged by their looks. And mm-hmm. some girls I was talking to said that in their class, the girls would do a rating system of every girl's best attributes. So like their legs, their everything, their right down to their eyebrows, their hair, like everything. And you know, and then they're looking on the list to see who's got like the best of each thing. And she was like, you know, I don't know. She didn't score best on anything, and she got like mm-hmm. the worst ratings on like half of her stuff, sort of thing. And it was just girls being girls. Maybe her group was exceptionally mean, but I mean they were rating each other's like eyelashes, everything, on a 1 to 10 scale. And so, and she's like, that was the day she realized, oh, we're going to be judged on our looks from now on. And I think it doesn't happen as acutely with guys. Like I don't ever remember having that happen. But at some point, guys go through something like that where they're like, oh wait, I'm not that big of a guy, or those guys are bigger, or I'm just really never going to be any taller than this, or you know, I'm not that strong, whatever it is. And it's something to do with the way we view ourselves as being, you know, a man or a provider or any of that stuff. And then for us it turns into something to do with body weight, at least for a lot of guys.
Sure. That's pretty funny. You mentioned women's rating systems and stuff like that. This weekend, Elle and I went shopping, and she was talking about, just joking around, talking about getting a $400 purse. I mean, that's not really not her style, but she was like, don't you think I look good? And I just was laughing. I was like, to be honest, I have never looked at a purse and been like, man, that turns me on.
I can't. Ever. I wouldn't know the difference between a $4 purse and a $400 purse.
Sure, and it was just funny to me because I was like, all you're doing is trying to, you know, that's like almost like F you to other girls. That's all that is. It's not, it has nothing to do with guys. It's all about, you know, just saying that to other girls, and that's it. Because I don't know a single guy that looks at a woman and goes, holy hell, look at that purse. Man, she's got to come home with me.
Yeah, I don't get that. Most of what girls do is compete with other girls on stuff that guys don't even notice. But their competition is based around a guy. Is based around the attention eventually from a guy.
Sure.
And guys do the same thing. They're trying to be bigger just to impress another guy. Whereas the girls are like, you've long since surpassed anything that I thought was attractive. Which again gets back to Adonis and Venus. It's the we're trying to bring it back home to like something with some rational sense behind it. With, you know, that's why we went into the attraction research and we're like, no, no, you don't need to be huge. You don't need the drugs. You don't need any of that stuff. You just need to be muscular and in shape.
So that's kind of interesting you went that direction, because I guess for the women, it's kind of the same thing. You know, competing for the guys, they totally took it down the path of darkness and just went deeper and deeper and deeper. So you're looking at the purses and this and that. And
oh, yeah.
It's to a point where guys don't even care about that stuff. Same thing with women. You get to a point where you're getting so big and doing all this other stuff that you think is attracting women. But you're really just competing with other guys at that point for nothing. Both don't win a prize.
Yeah, both genders are screwing it up. Girls are trying to be as thin as possible and ornament with the fanciest ornaments, you know, being a purse or whatever. And guys are trying to be bigger than the other guy, being the silverback gorilla and being like the leader of the pack. So we completely get lost and we don't realize, neither gender realizes that the other gender is not interested in that. And all they're doing is competing amongst themselves.
Right.
And so what we're trying to do is teach people, the Adonis guys and the Venus girls, to just get what we know, to we scientifically know and practically we can tell is what everyone's actually interested in. And it's that sweet spot. It's the two golden ratios.
Yeah.
And then from there, there's nothing, you know, it looks good on both sides. And it gives the girls a place to stop, like just stop when you get to your index, and it gives the guys a place to stop. Or at least a place to approximate to. Once you get there, if you want to knock a couple more pounds of fat off and really bring out your abs, that's fine. But you don't need to go much further than that.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting when we're talking about this, because it's totally going over and overshooting. I'm starting to understand a lot more now why even some guys that aren't that big or even on drugs, it's the same thing.
What do you mean?
Well, like, for instance, like guys taking the easy way out and thinking that basically the whole gist of it is to get bigger. But instead of really just working up to an AI by themselves, there are a lot of guys that just cop out and start taking drugs. They don't end up being super big, end up being a little bit bigger than they would naturally get, but they did it drug-induced wise, right? For the same reason. You know, basically just trying to go take the fast way, trying to stack on more with more, and then just stopping at that point. That's kind of the thing. It's like everything is – there's this sweet spot that we always talk about, but everybody else keeps going more and more or more with more. So even with the attraction type stuff, with buying more and more purses and more shoes and all this stuff, you know, using – you know, trying to get bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, it kind of just chases that down. It's really interesting.
Yeah, all of it. On both sides, it's rooted in an insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to kind of get over that at some point. But anyways, we've strayed a bit from our topic here about muscle building. So I guess we covered what the internal or these genetic influences are in muscle building. So back to the external influences is your workout. What kind of workout are you doing? Is it laid out well? Is it getting you to peak anabolic sensitivity, which is something I introduced on my blog today, and me and Pilon are going to talk about a bit more. And I think we all exist on a continuum, an anabolic continuum. So on one side is no growth potential, and on the other side is high growth potential. And where you are on that continuum is based on your age, your training status, how much you're training, the type of training you're doing. So. And then obviously drugs have an effect on that too, but let's just leave that out of the equation. So your anabolic sensitivity, like how sensitive you are to stimulus, is changes with all of those things. So if you start training right off the bat, nothing much happens your first few weeks or your first month or two. It's kind of your first few workouts just hurt like hell, and it doesn't seem like anything's working. It seems like everything's getting worse. And that's because your anabolic sensitivity is very low when you the very first time you pick up weights. Like it takes you like a week just to recover from one workout. And then after a few months, your sensitivity starts to build. Enzymes and hormones start ramping up. Various metabolic pathways start becoming accustomed to the workout routine and what's going on. And so a bunch of changes start happening. And then And all of these different pathways actually do start ramping up and changing. And then your sensitivity, your anabolic sensitivity to the workout starts increasing. And that's when you start noticing the big gains. And that sensitivity can peak for some amount of time. And everyone's response to that is different. And then somewhere along the line, your sensitivity starts to decrease again. And you become... You plateau and your anabolic sensitivity starts dropping. And I know some guys who've gone years without nothing's changed in years. And that's when you need to shake things up and become, I guess, resensitized and try to recapture a peak sensitivity state so you can adapt and grow again. And so those are – which requires a relatively big shakeup in your workout. I mean, that's why we have periodized routines where things change on a weekly and monthly basis. But then – on a quarterly basis per year, things have to change even again. So you got to be constantly changing to get out of your to stay in anabolic sensitivity or keep your sensitivity as high as possible. And so that's kind of the other side of the story. So your genetic material is one part of it, and then how well you kind of mix it up is the other part of it, and how well you coax yourself into being as sensitive as possible to your program. So, I mean, if you just pound away at the same exercise over and over again, eventually you will plateau. You got to do something different.
Interesting. So you're talking about raising a bunch of sensitive men now. I like it.
I didn't think of it that way. But. Yeah. So that's why program design matters. And that's why where you are in your development matters and your age and all of that, kind of all of those things come together to, it all makes a bit of a difference. So that's why 20 different people on the same workout will have slightly different results, and that's fine. They shouldn't necessarily have the exact same result because they're like you say, the initial conditions, like what there's where they are when they started is significantly different from the next guy over. They're not carbon copies of each other, so you're going to have different results. But then if you look back through their history and how they were when they started, that's what's going to kind of give you a better indication of what kind of result to expect out of that guy.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. That's interesting. I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons why muscle building research is such a disaster when you look through the subject groups. Like if a paper on muscle building research, like let's say, you know, 12 guys follow a program for 10 weeks and the average weight gain, first of all, weight, that's a terrible measure, but the average weight gain is, you know, 5 pounds or 8 pounds. It doesn't mean every guy gained 5 pounds. Some guys gained like 2, some guys gained 0, and some guys gained like 12. And then they average it for the results. And that's the stuff you hear about. But when you go through one guy at a time, every single guy in the study, you get wildly different results. And so, well, what happened to each guy? And how did they all end up with such different results? And then that's when you've got to tease out, well, where was their anabolic sensitivity? How long have they been training? How old is each guy? Like, how tall are they? Like the height alone can change how much muscle each guy can gain. So when you start looking at these factors, you realize that the research we do have on muscle building is really hard to interpret. And the average sort of numbers you get at the end, you can't just assume that number's what you're going to get. You could get double that or you could get half of that.
Right.
And it matters how similar you are to each specific guy in the study, not the average. Because the average, right. Some guys will be clustered around the average, but that's, you know, if a bunch of guys got about 5 or 6 pounds and then there were some higher and lower guys, which one are you the most representative of? The guys in the middle, the guys who were high responders or low responders? And so until you find the exact subjects you resembled, you won't really know what to expect if you followed that same program.
Sure. Yeah, I wonder what the standard deviation would look like on something like that.
Well, and that's the thing. You'd have to look through each one. You'd have to look through each study and see how they calculated their stats. That's why research isn't – I mean, most people who are quoting research haven't done that extensive of a look at it. They're just saying, hey, this workout produced this much weight in this many weeks. But
right.
I mean
because you could actually have a group of guys that would – you know, a big group of guys would cluster around a really low number, and then another medium-sized group cluster around a higher number. And maybe one guy who's just like a super compensator or whatever you want to call it, or just super sensitive, and he just kind of blows the curve. And so
that happens all the time. You get a couple outliers who drag the whole average up or drag the whole thing down.
Right.
And I mean, it's not necessarily clustered around the mean. I mean, you end up with an average, but it doesn't mean anyone even hit it.
Sure. So yeah, you could basically have a an average 8 pound gain for lack of lack of a better measurement at the time,
and have it made up of a bunch of guys who got 0 and a bunch of guys who got 16.
Yeah, or a bunch of guys that got like 4, but then like 2 guys that got like 12.
Yeah.
Or something. Then that would totally blow it. But the majority of the guys fall into a different deviation, a different standard, a pocket, if you will.
Yep. So you won't know that unless you analyze the individual subject data, which irritates me that it's not normally presented in research. Right. All you're given is the clustered data of the means however they cluster the data, but it's rare for research papers to give you individual subject data, which I think I don't know how it got that way, but I think that's irresponsible to some degree, because without it, you can't really do a full analysis of what you're really looking at.
Well, right. You'd almost have to have a headless picture of each person standing there before and after, and being able to choose what you look like to begin with to see where you would probably likely end up with that particular piece of research.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, that along with their stats, like how heavy are they? What's their body fat percentage? How long have they been training? How old are they? All of those things. And then you're like, oh, those 4 guys are just like me. And then you look at their 4, the results of those guys, and you're like, oh, those were the guys who clustered high. So like, I should expect to be like them. But without that, those specific data, you're not going to really know. You're not going to know which guys compare to you. And most research papers on muscle building, what they do is take the average baseline. So they take the average weight of everybody. They take the average height of everybody. They take everything's an average of everyone clustered together. But we don't care about that. We want to know what the guy just like me was like.
Sure. And that's kind of the big problem with a lot of this stuff is that people see this, they attempt it, they don't get the results, and for some reason they think they're flawed.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, exactly. And then it gets guys worried that they're doing something wrong, and they start buying supplements, or they start looking for they start falling for outlandish claims of other products because they think that that's what they need, or they're just like, hey, this isn't working, I need drugs or something like that. Like It's managing expectations is what we're trying to do here, what I'm trying to say is, someone who's requoting muscle building research who hasn't explained all of these things I just explained isn't really doing you a favor when they just say this will help you gain 10 pounds. It's another reason why there's creatine responders and creatine non-responders in the creatine research. Like, we don't really know exactly who the responders and non-responders are. There has been research that some people have naturally high levels and they happen to be non-responders because they just can't get any more creatine into them. Like, their muscles won't uptake much more because they seem to already have a high creatine level. Which, if you look at it the other way around, you would guess that then that probably is a guy who is already relatively strong and muscular, and he may already be a high caliber athlete. Simply because if he already had high creatine levels, he was probably bigger, stronger, faster his whole life, and always excelled in sports.
Yeah, kind of the reason why vegetarians respond typically better to creatine as well, just because...
Well, they're not getting any in their diet, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so when you look at it that way, it's hard to tell. Like, when people ask what kind of gain they should expect from creatine, it's like, I don't know. I mean, I could read the research and tell you that this is the average, but I can't tell you if anyone in that study is the same as you.
But here's the funny thing about it is that you could actually look at any of the research and say, and people could quote vegetarianism and say, dude, all you got to do is be a vegetarian and take creatine and you'll get crazy gains. But
yeah,
I mean, if you looked at it that way, because that's the way it looks, vegetarians are higher, have a higher response, but that doesn't take into account.
Well, they're probably starting with lower muscle mass and strength to begin with.
Sure, exactly.
So the creatine's probably just bringing them back up to normal instead of above normal.
Yeah, but nobody would say that. That's not the claim.
Well, yeah, and of course. And most muscle building research is done on guys who've never trained before anyways to take advantage of the initial growth spurt that they get. So there's all kinds of issues with muscle building research. So I guess wrapping it up to the whole topic of what can you do to build muscle, or what the major influences are, it's your starting material and how you train. And since you can't change your starting material, meaning your genetic predisposition, that's not even anything to worry about. All you can really worry about is your training. Calories for muscle building, if someone can ever prove to me how many you need, I would love to see it. Actually, I'm throwing that challenge out to everybody listening. If you think you've got the definitive research that shows how many calories you need to build muscle, by all means, forward it to me. I'm positive it doesn't exist. I wouldn't even worry about calories for muscle building. I would just focus on training.
Sure.
I don't even know where else to go with it from there. I guess my last point there would be, role modeling. Try to, if you have to pick a role model, pick somebody you know, at least somebody you know who is more or less the same somatotype age as you and who you know is doing or not doing drugs. At least is going to do what you're going to do. Like if you're going to take maybe some creatine and he does, then that's fine. But if you know he takes drugs, I mean, and you're never going to take drugs, that's kind of, you know, he's kind of a lousy role model. What good is that going to be for you?
Well, not a lousy role model like Charles Barkley-esque, like I'm not a role model, not like that, but.
Oh yeah. Well, no, a lousy body image model.
Right. There you go.
Exactly.
Let's clarify that. We don't want to say that this person's a bad person.
No. Yeah. No, not at all. Not at all. Not that they're, I just meant like if they gained 30 pounds in a summer, but they used, you know, a gram of testosterone a week to do it and you're not going to, well, their training program and any advice they have on how to gain that muscle is going to be basically useless.
Sure. Yep. Makes sense to me, man.
Yep.
So, well, cool. Well, I guess anything to touch off on? I think we kind of got that out of the way, huh?
I think we're good there.
Cool, man. Well, like I say, I mean, I can't really think of anything else to cover as far as muscle building today. You know, guys, one of the things you can do is actually submit questions on the blog posts and things like that we post these on, and they actually will help us out to kind of determine some of the directions that you guys want to hear about, and we'll talk about it and get the tease out the information for you of what's really important. And, you know, like I say, just get on the blog and post your questions and we'll talk about them. We won't answer individually just because we can't for the most part, but we'll address them in a big audio piece or something like that, and we'll get that handled.
Yeah, to follow this up, maybe, like, I don't even know what to say as far about muscle building, because I feel like there's nothing else to say besides just train, and you'll be consistent with your training, and that's the best you can do. So unless there's specific questions, I'm at a loss. I mean, I know how to make you 250 pounds, but it just requires drugs. And then the Adonis index is my answer for how big you can get clean. But again, that's just training, and kind of food and supplements have nothing to do with it. So I guess my answer is way kind of simple. There's not much to it. So if there's something specific you want to know about, for sure, like Brad just said, put the questions in and I can answer those things specifically. Like we had a question about BCAs the other day, branched chain amino acids. But other than that, I don't really know where else to go with it, because to me the answer is pretty basic. So if this was a limited sort of answer, that's only because I think there's limited things we can do.
Sure. And then the other thing is basic, you know, training programs and things like that. And, you know, I mean, if you have questions about creating training programs, well, the sad thing about it, not sad thing, but the thing about it, we've already done it for you. I mean, it's already done. So, I mean, if you wanted to create your own, that's one thing. And that takes, I mean, the type of learning that you would probably have to put together to do something that level. I mean,
I'd basically have to walk you through exactly how I built everything we built.
Right, which would take forever.
Well, it would just be like building a whole new one, which is what's the point of that?
Right, it's already done.
Yeah. So.
Exactly, man. Well, like I say, man, thanks again for stopping by and dropping some good knowledge. For John Barbin, I am Brad Howard, and that was your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.